Hannah Decker-Keels joined me on this episode. Hannah has been diagnosed 3 times with 3 different types of breast cancer. Her initial diagnosis came in August 2016 when she was 42 years old. A year later, the cancer had spread and mutated into a different type of cancer. After 2.5 years of being stable, the cancer once again spread and mutated into a 3rd type of cancer. Hannah talks about her treatments, writing her book, getting married, and starting a foundation with her new husband called Living Hope Cancer Foundation. Take a listen in as Hannah shares her story. Welcome to Behind the Pink Ribbon, where we share stories, information, and other content related to breast cancer. My name is Melissa Adams. I am a 12-year genetic breast cancer survivor. I've learned so much through my own journey with breast cancer. I have met some amazing people along the way, many that have become lifelong friends. I have experienced the emotional roller coaster of a breast cancer diagnosis, heartache, anger, frustration, loneliness, and even gratitude. Through this podcast, we will speak to breast cancer survivors, supporters, and healthcare professionals to gain insight and understanding behind the pink ribbon. Thank you so much for being with me today, Hannah.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here with you.
So let's talk a little bit about your story, just kind of where it started. So I know, we had talked about, I had introduced that, you know, you were diagnosed when you were 42 in August of 2016. What was going on for you? Were you getting a baseline mammogram? Were you doing a self-exam? Where does your story start?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. So I actually found it myself. Didn't really do regular self-checks, but kind of, I guess, knew what was going on in my body. And actually, 3 months before I found the lump in my breast, my husband of 21 years plus decided to leave me kind of really unexpectedly, and it just shook me, and I cried literally for 3 months straight. And then found my lump.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm a nurse. So I was like, it's a cyst. You know, I'm going to sit on it for a month. Let me see like if this goes away. I'd never really had any issues before. And it wasn't going away. And you just get that niggly feeling like you've got to deal with this. So I called, and I just moved here 6 months prior. So I didn't really know any kind of doctor situation. I didn't have a regular gynecologist yet. So I just kind of looked it up. Googled it and found a breast care center in Arizona and called them, and it took like 6 weeks to be seen. In retrospect, I wish I had been quicker.
So at this point, you're kind of like 2.5 months out from finding the lump
when
you were seen. Okay.
Yeah. So ended up being like July, late July. And they're like, yeah, we're going to do an ultrasound. And then when I had my ultrasound, she's like, you need to get upstairs right away to get a mammogram. And then also decided I needed a high-definition ultrasound. And that day, I was there for hours. That day, they already started using the C-word. And they were like, we really think it's cancer. And the next day, I was scheduled to go on a missions trip to Fiji.
Oh.
And I was like, can I still go? And they're like, please go. Just have a good time. Go.
Oh, wow. That gave me chills.
Yeah. And the next morning that I got back, I was gone for 12 days. I had my biopsy. So that whole time I was away, I was like, I think I have cancer, but I don't know what it is. Yeah. So that was a really rough, weird time for me.
Yeah.
And I just gone through a big separation. So that was August 15th of 2016, 4 years ago, this month was when I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer, high grade. So it was really fast growing, and it was triple positive.
So had you done a baseline mammogram prior to all of this?
No, that's okay. Kind of crunchy, and just never really felt like squishing your breasts was a great idea.
Well, and it's kind of hard because I know the guidelines are, you know, sometimes some years it's 40 and sometimes, you know, it's 50.
Right.
It's always changing. So nobody really knows when to go. So I wasn't sure if that was the case. And was there any like family history or anything?
No, my paternal grandmother had it when she was like 78.
Okay.
And usually when it's that late in the game, they don't consider it hereditary. So no, I don't have any family history at all. Like I'm the only person. I have 2 sisters. I have a mom, lots of aunts, and none of them have breast cancer. So yeah, it's definitely like it threw me because I was considered to be the healthy one, like, you know, ate all organic and paleo and exercised somewhat regularly and just lived more of a healthy lifestyle. So for me, I really felt like it was just big emotional unbalance in my life that really just upset everything in my whole body.
And that's the, you know, that's kind of the hard part is sometimes we, you know, trauma can lead to many other things.
Our
bodies, you know, are sensitive to those kind of things, that unbalance and upset and, you know, all of that stuff. So you said it was triple positive.
Yes.
Okay. And stage three, fast growing. So, you know, I mean, first of all, like it's surprising, but also, you know, like I said, it kind of gave me the chills that they were like, go to Fiji, you know, you know, just because I'm sure that when they're looking at it, you know, they're trained, they know, and they probably realize like, this is probably something, you know, bigger. And I don't know how they determine exactly the stage and all of that. I mean, I know how they do it, but in terms of like, using all of the tools, I don't know what they use to make that determination, but you know, that's kind of exciting. So, that they let you go to Fiji.
Yes.
I mean, really what a great experience to have, before you kind of walked into, the storm, really.
Yeah. It gave me a lot of perspective, I think, on, you know, what's really important and going there. And these people are just destitute, completely impoverished. And I specifically work in eye surgery when I was working. And so just to be able to give people a vision, it was just really special. And it just took me out of the whole realm in a good way.
Yeah.
And came back fighting. Like I was ready to figure out what to do next. And yeah. So August I got diagnosed. September I had my divorce. October they scheduled my double mastectomy with immediate implants.
Oh my gosh.
So it was just like one thing after another. I actually refused chemo and radiation at the time.
Okay.
And I went alternative and did really high mega dose vitamin C treatments for about 10, 12 months.
So was it just the concern of the toxicity related to chemo and radiation, or, you know, what kind of led you to that decision?
Yeah, for me, it was something I'd always told myself. What I knew it was for me, it was more of an immune system problem as well. So I thought, hey, if I'm going to knock out my immune system with chemo, I'm never going to be able to fight this. So actually the vitamin therapy worked really well for 10 to 12 months. And then about a year later, because I would just keep having scans. I would do CT scans every 3 months just to keep an eye on what was going on. Everything was shrinking tiny, tiny, tiny. Almost immeasurable. And then all of a sudden it just blew up all over my chest wall, lungs, and armpits.
So were your doctors on board with you not doing the chemo and the radiation?
No.
I kind of figured not. I mean,
you know. Most oncologists won't because it's not standard protocol, standard of care. But the doctor I had, he was kind of like, okay, I don't agree with you, but I will help you. You know, I'm just going to help. Okay. You know, I'll order the scans, and if you want whatever tests you want, let me know. So it's very interesting because I ended up going back to him more recently. that's another part of the story. But so I have a really good relationship with him, and I think that's huge for when you go through this, that you have a doctor you trust.
Right.
You really have a great connection with.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I definitely feel like you have to have that connection with your doctor. And if you don't, then it's, you know, really within your interest to pursue a different doctor.
For sure.
Yeah. So when you went back, you said it was about 10 or 12 months, that the vitamin C was working and then things kind of exploded. So was it the same doctor?
So at the time I still had the same doctor. He wasn't giving me the IV treatment. I was going to somebody else for that, but he was kind of like in the background. And so at that time I did. However, I was actually on a different insurance. So I was able to go to Cancer Treatment Centers of America.
Okay. Yeah.
Originally was diagnosed at Mayo and then actually interviewed 3 different oncologists and decided to go with cancer treatment. So that was kind of an interesting part of my journey too, because I'm an OR nurse by profession and was very comfortable with doctors and realizing like I wanted to interview and work with whoever I was comfortable with. And it was interesting because I got three different treatment plans from three different doctors with this. I had the same diagnosis, yeah. You know, so it's just very interesting noticing that even now standard of care is whatever the doctor decides it's going to be.
It's not really standard.
So that year later when everything exploded, they did a biopsy of a node next to my trachea, paratracheal node, and they found that I had hormone positive, HER2 negative. So actually my cancer mutated. And that actually gave me the ability to go on oral medication instead of chemo. So it's sort of like an oral chemo. They sometimes will call it chemotherapy, but technically it works on the cellular level. So right. It's a targeted therapy. So when I met you, that's what I was on for a couple months already. So it was a hormone blocker and a targeted therapy that I just take every day.
So how big was the initial tumor? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. How big was the initial tumor? Do you remember?
Not very big. It was 1.2 centimeters.
Okay. And then lymph node involvement?
Yes. 8 out of 10 in my right armpit were involved.
And then,
so they removed them all.
Okay. And then, so that one, that was triple positive. So they removed your breast, did the implants, did all of that. They removed the tumors, I'm assuming, removed the lymph nodes. So then it mutated, but it mutated into a different cancer. It was PR positive, but HER2 negative. HER2 negative. Now.
Yes. Yes.
That's the crazy. That's crazy.
Yes. And it gets crazier. The story continues. So I was on Ibrance and Letrozole for 2.5 years. Pretty stable. Like there's times I had nothing and then it came back. And then it was just stable for about 2 years straight. Like there was no growth. Mm-hmm. Just was like a few little nodules, a few little lymph nodes, nothing really changing. And again, I was still every 3 months I was having scans. I went back to my oncologist that I'd been going to because again, my insurance changed because I stopped working. Went on Social Security Disability, which I highly recommend if you do get stage 4 diagnosis. It actually gave me a lot of freedom to focus on my kids. I had 4 teenagers at the time, was a single mom. They lived with me. And so it just took all that weight off of like having to work and just getting to kind of live my life. And I actually started getting to travel a little bit. I was born in Holland. So I went back to Holland 2 times in the last few years just to reconnect with all of my family.
Yeah.
It's really special.
Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking like, you know, I mean, I don't know anything in terms of like your ex-husband and, you know, what kind of financial support he provided for the kids, you know, but to think about like, number one, here you are just recently divorced. You know, now you're a single mom, you have 4 boys, you know, teenagers at that. So I would imagine that there's, you know, sports and activities and all of those things. And then you're fighting stage 3 breast cancer. Like I just, and trying to figure out how to provide for them.
Yeah. It was a lot. And actually my ex-husband didn't provide for us for 1.5 years.
Oh my gosh.
So I had to work, you know? And so when everything progressed, this provided like some stability for me, at least have a fixed income. So eventually a lot of that got resolved, but, it was a really big test of my faith too. And I think that's such a big part of my story, that, you know, I just realized I didn't have to trust in myself or my ex-husband to provide, but God was really providing for me at that time. And through all different ways, like people would just send me checks here and there, hand me money. It was like the craziest thing. I was always very overwhelmed by their generosity, but always taken care of, like in times where it was just exactly what I needed at the time. So,
sometimes it was pretty. Sometimes, you know, humans show up in ways that we don't expect.
Yeah, for sure. I've had a lot of that.
Well, I'm glad. So in terms of, you know, the second diagnosis, you know, did you have to do any radiation or, you know, was it just that oral chemo?
Yeah, it was just the oral pill that I had okay. to take.
And not to say just.
Because but. Radiation, yeah, I know. Radiation is usually not like if you have scattered lymph node involvement, they don't, there's not like one thing to radiate. There's too much. So it's okay. just not really part of the protocol. And I, you know, I was doing the protocol then at that point. Right. Yeah. So, you know, another long story short, last summer I ended up writing a book and finishing my book because I wanted to tell my story of some of the losses I'd gone through. And so I finished it up last July and I came home and I was like, I'm trying to figure out how to publish this thing. I don't know how to publish it. I know I have to probably self-publish it. So I was telling one of my best friends and she's like, I don't know why I never told you about my cousin. He just self-published a book. You should talk to him. He survived end-stage cancer. I was like, okay. She's like, well, his name is Chuck Keels. Why don't you look him up on Facebook? I don't have his cell phone number. So I went home. And this is exactly a year ago, in August of 2019. And I went and Googled Chuck Keels. And I was like, I'm just going to send him a message on Messenger. However, he had 5,000 friends. And when you have 5,000 friends, you can't become his friend. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to message him. And if he ever finds it, I'll be happy. And if he doesn't, you know, no harm done. So I sent it August 28th, which is a couple days ago, last year. And a whole month later, he found it on September 28th.
Oh my gosh.
And I happened to be out of town. I was out of country actually visiting Holland, people in Holland. And he starts messaging me. He's like, I'm so sorry. I didn't see this message. Let's get together for coffee. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of out of the country. It's going to be a few weeks before I get home. So we just started messaging back and forth. And he's stalking my page and asking me all these questions. And we start video chatting and 2 weeks later, I get back to the States and he picks me up from the airport with flowers.
Oh my God.
We spent 2 hours talking in the car before he, like, I went inside and totally jet lagged and had breakfast the next morning and just pretty much saw each other ever since. So that was October 9th, which is, this is a fun part of the story, I think. So October 9th, he picked me up. We got engaged November 14th. Married January 1st.
Well, so I saw you in October of 2019. Yes. And when I saw you, which it was very unexpected, I wasn't expecting to see you at the event where we were. Mm-hmm. And I was super excited to see you just in general. Yeah. But then when I saw you with this man, and I, you know, I had known about your ex-husband and, you know, the divorce. Mm-hmm. And when I saw you with him, I was so excited and I could just see, you know, the light and the shine mm-hmm. that just radiated off of both of you. Like, it just gives me chills thinking about because, I mean, I would have been happy just to see you, but to see you with him and to see, like, he is just smitten over you, girl.
Oh yeah. For sure. And we had so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, we have a lot of similarities and his story is amazing because he actually had end stage prostate cancer with 3 months to live 5 years ago. Wow. And he ended up having a vision of Jesus reaching out, touching him in the recovery room after having a couple surgeries. And, from that point on, he just kept healing so fast. The doctors still are like, we don't know what happened. You know, it's totally a miracle. And so it's really neat to, when I was talking to him, understanding that he actually had a cancer journey and not a lot of guys can handle it, you know, like,
right.
you know, when you're a middle-aged woman and you're trying to date or even thinking about dating, it's gotta be a really special guy to be able to handle the diagnosis in the first place. Because technically it's terminal, you know, people say that and, you know, you're not really offering a lot of hope or a future. If you want to talk about diagnoses and, you know, reality of what doctors will tell you. So, yeah, it was really interesting to meet him because it was when I was looking at his Facebook page, I was like, this guy could handle my story. He could handle me with my boys. He has two boys. And, yeah, so it was really neat when we met and started talking and just realized like God had put us together, you know, a bazillion years ago, and knowing that we need each other. And the pairing is just so cool, like how we just interlace with our gifts and our strengths and weaknesses and how we can help each other. And, you know, I have four boys, he has two, and they all literally are in age order. It's the craziest thing. His boys fit right in.
I didn't know before, that. That's awesome.
Yeah, before their last birthday, because my last child just had a birthday, they were 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just so funny, like, to have that time of year. But yeah. Then one of them had a birthday, so I messed it up. But
it'll happen.
Yeah, it's been
it'll
really fun. They don't all live with us, so that makes it way easy. You know, we only have two of them with us.
Right.
But it's been really special to have just another dad in their life, and then for his boys to have a mom here, because their mom's kind of been out of the picture forever, for 18 years, so just on and off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been really neat to, like, totally didn't see this coming, but just to have this whole new, beautiful part of our lives.
And I feel like that's always how it happens. Like, you know, the moment where you aren't looking, right, and you're not searching for something, is the moment when it shows up. And it isn't always maybe what you realized that you needed in that moment, but it is.
Yeah, for sure. And he's my best friend. I'm like, how do you find somebody to be your perfect best friend, you know, that can put up with all your crazy stuff in middle age? You know, you bring a lot of baggage and just habits.
Oh, absolutely.
Both do, to a relationship. And it's just amazing. Like, you know, some of that, we just figured out the stuff that is really important, like both of our faith, you know, the way we parent, love our kids, and how we love other people. And we have, like, so much in our cancer story that's part of what's important to us, and that those are all the things that really matter. And then the other stuff you just kind of work through, and it's just not deal breakers, you know?
And I think
it's been really cool.
And I think the two of you come from a different perspective, right? You know, both of you have had a diagnosis of stage 4, and, you know, I think, you know, I can't really speak to it. I don't have that diagnosis, but just the people that I know in my life, who have had that diagnosis, you know, I think it puts things into perspective, and, you know, the things that might have become a deal breaker previously aren't so much now, you know, because you realize what's important and what's not, you know.
That's right.
And if he leaves his dirty socks, you know, at the bottom of the bed, or, you know, whatever it might be, okay, fine. You know, might not like it, but is that really going to be the end of the relationship because of the dirty socks, you know?
It's not even worth fighting over, honestly. No. Like, we don't really fight. Like, we just don't, they don't matter. It's like, I'll just pick them up and move them, or be like, hey, bud, do you mind if you move these? There's the laundry basket, you know, like, that's how we are now. And it's cool, as we've, like, been married now for 8 months. We're figuring that all out. And we've had some really rough last 4 months, which I want to tell you about.
Yeah. Well,
I know, you know, a little bit about it.
I do. But I do want to touch on. So in January, you got married.
Yes.
And then in January, you also started a foundation together.
We did. So as I was, like, getting to know him, he was telling me, you know, I was, like, you know, doing irrigation and landscaping. He had a great company for years that he was running and really successful, and then wrote his book, and just felt like I was calling him to help coach people that were going through cancer. And naturally, these people were just finding him somehow. And part of his background is, like, you know, he's just really energetic and kind of has that whole coach mentality anyway. And so he just started telling people, like, because they're asking, what did you do? And he's like, well, I had to build back my body. Like, you know, yes, I was healed, but I had a broken body from prostate cancer and just lost 40 pounds. So he had to, like, build all that muscle back up. And he was a gym rat before his cancer. So, you know, we both have these experiences too. Like, our bodies are not the same. They weren't the way they were before we had our diagnoses. So he started juicing, and he was using, like, really good essential oils like frankincense and copaiba and a couple other ones that really help him. And, you know, his realizing, like, how much family and love and community is such a big part of it, part of healing. You need to have people around you, and movement is really huge. So there's all these, like, pillars in his mind that he would help teach people. And I was like, why didn't you start like a, some kind of business like that? Like you should be, you know, have a nonprofit. And so we started talking about that. And then we obviously got engaged and we're like, okay, I think this is where God's calling us next is to start a nonprofit together. We can help people because I had been doing it on my like different terms, just through friends of friends, you know, that breast cancer and would just naturally coach them too. And so I think, you know, God's given both us very upbeat personalities and just love for people and just want to help people and serve them. And so, yeah, we just kept praying through it and we filled out the 501c3 paperwork and got it back in 4 weeks. And we thought it would take 6 months.
yeah, that's the best turnaround.
It was just like one thing after another. We got our website, we got our name and our .com and just built it ourselves. Cause I was like, oh, we don't have a budget to like hire somebody. So, you know, so we just kind of figured it out. And, over the last, you know, the first few months of the year, we actually did a trip out east through Texas and Tennessee and met with some clients that he had met with and, just made a lot of connections. And it's really cool. Like we'll go to a coffee shop and end up talking to the whole coffee shop about our stories. And so part of that's like also Chuck's very dynamic personality, you know, but
yes,
he has such a great story and it's such a story of hope, you know, the ability to be healed and to not have to die from cancer, you know, like that's kind of where you go in your mind. I struggled with it till I actually met him to like, I couldn't dream. I couldn't think of, you know, I could think of maybe one trip to do this year, but I had nothing on the calendar for this year. Like I just didn't know how to plan for my life. And you almost need somebody to give you permission to live, you know? And so that's been something I've watched him do and talk to people in hospice and they're getting up and sending us videos of them dancing with their family and playing cards and smiling and they're not in bed with the sheets pulled up to their nose. You know, they're actually living like however that looks for their family, having great memories. And, you know, some people die and then some people actually are doing really well because they've got like this fight in their life to work at it. You know, we always say there's a doctor's plan, the medical plan, and then there's the mindset, your plan.
Yes.
And you have so much control over your healing because, you know, what if the doctor's plan doesn't work? Then all your plans are gone, right? So you can't bank on that one. And I've seen it in my own life, you know, in the last few months. So starting February, I started losing my voice, which you can probably hear a little bit. And I knew something was going on in March where, like, I kept losing my breath. My heart rate kept going up. And so my oncologist sent me to the cardiologist, and they put monitors on me. And, like, nobody could figure out. And I'm like, there's something going on. There's something new.
Well, and you had been in the hospital.
Like, not then.
Not then.
At that point yet. No. So this is all of March. I was like, something's going on. And so my neck started hurting. And this is all when COVID started the end of March and part of the beginning of April. So I had a chiropractor come to my house and adjust my neck. And I was like, you know, it's not helping. And finally, I convinced my doctor to let me have my CT scan early and had to pay for it myself. But I was so convinced something was going on. And the day, you know, I got my results the same day and they're like, your cancer has spread all over the place. You know, now I had a liver spot. I had something going on, maybe in my neck. I had, just a bunch of growth. And, one was pressing on my pulmonary artery and airway, which was causing all these problems for me and my breathing. And, so then they're like, you need to go to the radiologist today. You need to start radiation, get mapped. Next week, we're going to, you know, start radiation. We're going to do a liver biopsy. Like, it's all set up for the whole next week.
Wow.
So, you know, it just threw me.
Yeah.
Well, the next day I woke up on a Saturday and I had so much pain in my neck that I was throwing up like pretty much for a couple hours. And finally I was in so much pain that we decided to take me to the ER. And, you know, during COVID, it's the last place you want to go for
exactly.
a lot of reasons. But especially then, it was beginning, the middle of April or something. And so I finally, they did like a couple tests when I got there. You know, my husband had to drop me off and I'm in pain throwing up.
Well,
alone
and he couldn't
in
go
the little
in.
ER. Yeah. He couldn't go in, but he stayed outside in the parking lot, slept in his truck.
Oh.
It was late at night. And they come back in, they're like, your neck is so fractured, the C6 part of your neck, your spine, is completely obliterated by the tumor.
Wow.
And so they quickly put a brace on my neck, and they were like, we're going to let your husband come in because we're going to move you to a different hospital that has a neuro ICU because you need surgery. So, I was like, what? Yeah,
just yeah, I really mean, crazy everything stuff. I mean, everything just sounded like it happened so fast. And
it really did.
I mean, really, like, here is one of those things that, I think it's really important that our listeners hear, whether they are survivors or, if they're caregivers or even if they haven't had an experience with cancer, but somewhere down the line, somebody they know or they end up in that situation. The biggest thing that you can do for yourself is just keep at it. I know that you have talked about your doctor and that you're comfortable with your doctor and, but your doctor was hesitant to send you for scans because my assumption is you weren't due.
You weren't due
for a scan.
Exactly.
And so
you have to advocate for yourself. You have to, or find somebody that will, right. And that's one of my biggest things. That's actually a piece of my part of the coaching is like, know your diagnosis, know everything about yourself, like do that research because you can only help yourself.
Yeah.
And like, listen if you put your body. Head in the sand, you're not going to help yourself,
Right. Yeah. So, and it's so important to listen to your body. Like our body leaves clues.
Yes.
And
the pain.
Yeah, exactly. Pain is the first.
Pain. I was like, I wish I'd gone earlier. Now I know. Like, don't let that sit.
Right.
Especially when you have you might not think it's cancer, but it was kind of crazy, like in retrospect, realizing that that's what it all was and I could have caught it even earlier.
But it's really hard when you have, a medical professional who is, I don't know what the conversations were, but obviously he wasn't willing to send you initially. It mm-hmm. wasn't enough of a concern that he was willing to send you for that scan. So it's hard, when you're trying, it's trying to find that fine balance between being mindful of what's going on in your body, listening to your body, but then at the same time, not believing that every ache and pain is cancer.
Yes. That's always a really tricky one.
Yeah.
Stage 4 for sure. But even if you've had one or two, you're always worried about it. It's in the back of your mind.
Absolutely. But I think sometimes we have to listen to our gut above mm-hmm. listening to our head, even listening to our heart. I think some of the times we feel things in our gut and we just need to listen. So, I'm glad that you advocated for yourself. Obviously, I'm sad that, the doctor took a little bit longer to order those scans, but I'm glad that you were persistent and continued and said, we've got to do this.
Yeah. And part of that story is also insurance because he was willing to eventually, a week later or whatever, he's like, sure, I'll order it. But then insurance doesn't cover it because you're not hitting the 90-day mark. So I even got that expedited by calling. So yeah, it's just there's so much you can do for yourself. It's work. And if you can't do it yourself because you just don't have the energy, get somebody to help you because that's such a big part of this. It's part of my story is really like advocated for myself so many times because nobody else was there for me,
Right.
Not even like doctors and like they're there, but they don't have that, that sense of urgency that we do as patients or caregivers. So yeah, that's a really big lesson that I've learned in this and something I want to convey to all my clients too, is just to really don't be afraid of it. Don't apologize for it. Just do it.
Yeah, no, there is no apology in this. When you are in the fight for your life, there are no apologies. Like you do whatever it is that you need to do. And honestly, I don't care what stage it is. Obviously there are some things that are more pressing, but anytime that there's any kind of cancer diagnosis, like you've got to do what's good for you. And sometimes you have to press and sometimes you have to, maybe upset some people, but don't be apologetic for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that weekend, I ended up having surgery on Monday to cut off my carotid artery supply to the tumor so it would be dry enough to have surgery. And then the next day they did another surgery that took out the tumor, packed it. They put in a cage in my neck. It all went through the front of my neck too, the surgery did. And then they fused my C5 through C7. So it was pretty significant surgery.
Yeah.
Ended up in the neuro ICU for a couple days, all alone, because this is COVID, right? So all new coronavirus, like nobody could go anywhere. You couldn't have people come in. So I did all of this stuff alone, which is really amazing to think about how many people are alone in the hospital right now. And I ended up being hospitalized several times since then. That actually made me lose my voice even more because they moved my esophagus and potentially injured my vocal cord. So I now have 50% of my vocal cord working. So that was like, that was a really hard time because I couldn't eat right away. There were so many changes, a lot of losses for me. My voice, being able to eat.
So did they have you through an IV for nutrition, or were you doing like liquid?
Thankfully, I was able to do liquids and really soft foods. So I went home. I was actually home on Wednesday. So I had surgery Monday, Tuesday.
Oh my gosh.
I was home because I felt good. And I was like, I just want to be home with my husband, my care, you know, people taking care of you.
Yeah.
So that was pretty miraculous too, to be able to get home, and had to wear a neck brace for 6 to 7 weeks. So like every bump in the road you could feel, you know,
it was just
really unstable neck for a few weeks. So I really was kind of stuck at home, except that we started radiation the following week that I got home from the hospital, and it was every day during the weekday.
So where were they targeting the radiation?
So the first one was on my chest node. So pretty much like in the middle of my chest.
Okay.
I had a lymph node that had a tumor in it that was pressing my pulmonary artery and airway. So they wanted to attack that one first. So I had 10 days of, so it was like 2.5 weeks of radiation. So I'd like have to lay down, hold my neck, lay down on this hard table. And that was my first experience with radiation. About halfway through, I started having major problems swallowing, like just couldn't swallow food, and just had to go back to liquid diet. So I was like doing pureed soup or pureeing whatever people brought over for food, and ended up in the hospital, the ER twice, because I just couldn't swallow food. And they kept saying, you know, it's probably just from your surgery, send me home. And then I finally like woke up one morning and I was like, I cannot swallow my own spit. Like, this is so bad. So I went back to the ER and they did more tests and did a swallow test and figured out finally that I had so much burning inside my esophagus from the radiation that they was like 30% of it was ulcerated. So they had me on IV fluids, and it took about the 4 days or something in the hospital. And I finally asked for a feeding tube and they put one in, and it took 10 more days for me to be able to swallow my spit. It was really gross.
I'm sure.
And I lost 25 pounds.
Yeah. And I think the thing is that, you know, I think there's this misunderstanding about radiation, you know, where it's portrayed as the easier treatment for cancer, which I totally do not agree with. You know, and people don't realize that, you know, even though the radiation might be targeting your chest, that radiation is moving, you know, it's hitting
scattering.
Other parts. Yes.
It's cutting through everything.
Exactly. So, you know, you're not the only person I've ever heard of that has had difficulties, you know, in their throat when the radiation is targeted to the chest.
Yeah, and it's really sad because the thing with radiation is it just accumulates over time.
Yes.
So
I call it the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, like I'm still feeling the effects of it even though I stopped it.
Right.
You know, I had 12 days total because I did let them do it on my neck for 2 days, and that was part of it. So I went back and I was like, I'm not doing it anymore. Like, I'm refusing the rest of my treatment.
Absolutely.
Because I need to swallow, and I'm still having swallowing difficulties. I ended up with the feeding tube for 7 weeks, and it got a name, and it was called Tubi. And Tubi went everywhere and had adventures. I even biked with Tubi, but I couldn't go in the ocean with Tubi. That was really tough. But I was very happy when I got rid of Tubi, and now I'm able to go swimming again. And it really affected lifestyle and then, you know, the athleticism of life. I was very thankful. It kept me alive. I mean, I would not be alive probably without it.
Absolutely. Well, so, but one of the things is, you know, one of the, I mean, So there are many reasons why I just absolutely adore you. But one of the things that I think I adore the most is, you know, you've really been handed a hard set of cards. And yet your zest for life is unlike many that I've ever seen before.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say the zest for life, because actually one of the mottos that we've come up with for our Living Hope Cancer Foundation is get up and live. And, you know, we love like the whole life is good t-shirt thing. And it kind of made us think like, hey, let's start a t-shirt line. So we've actually done that too. And hopefully we'll launch soon. Featuring bald heads, Chuck and Hannah with our dog Jax. But that whole concept of getting up and live, and we would just sort of put it here and there. And all of a sudden we're like, we need to use this as our like main motto, because it's such a huge part of our lives. It's just like, what do you have to do today? You get to live. You wake up with breath in your lungs and you got a whole day to live. And, you know, I think we start realizing like with our diagnoses, the value of every day that God gives us, and you get to live it well, or you have a choice. You know, you can lay in bed and roll over and pull up the covers with a diagnosis or with anything, you know, any kind of hard stuff, or you can choose to live with it, live well, and, you know, maybe deal with the problems. I had to go to counseling. I had some really hard things happen to me that I had to go talk to somebody about, and there's no shame in that. And just being able to conquer and deal with the things face on, you know, and so, you know, we have these really cool things we get to do now every day that my husband and I do, and we take our weekends and enjoy them and go kayaking and like try to feel alive in a good way, you know. And that's just been something I've always wanted to, you know, I've done alone, but to be a partner with somebody that like supports me 100%. And, you know, there's
different.
Hey, I have limits now. Like I still cannot hike, but I can kayak.
Yeah.
And so we got a tandem kayak. We found a used one that we could afford.
Very nice.
We got a tandem bike so we can bike together. Yeah. My voice is really soft, and so I can't yell. I can't talk to him if he's on a bike next to me, but I can talk to him when he's right in front of me on our tandem.
Yeah.
And so like there, I've been missing a lot of things in life. You know, like my voice is practically gone. Every day I lose it. You know, I can't sing anymore. But there's ways that I can meet my deficits, the negative things, with positives. And like, it doesn't mean my life is over or I can't go biking because I can't talk to him. You know, we've figured out ways to address the problem and still live and just really get to enjoy each other and just value like sitting next to each other with a cup of coffee, holding each other's hands. Like we've gone back to really simple things that are so special. And
yeah. And that's the most important stuff.
Yeah.
That is the important stuff. Yeah,
it is. It's the stuff that lasts and
absolutely
heals.
Right.
So it's really cool. My last scan was 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
And so I've also been on chemo. I neglected to say that. So
okay.
I've been on Abraxane and I've been on immunotherapy called Tecentriq for almost 3 months. So this week will be my fourth round, the last one of my fourth round. And so my last scan showed that my cancer is almost gone.
Yay!
In two and a half months time, it is almost gone. And that's the most gone it's been in 3 years. So right. 4 years almost, which is really wild, right? So
yeah.
It's really exciting, you know, and I'd always said I'm not going to do chemo, but kind of got stuck in this place because I think we didn't talk about this either, that my tumor actually was triple negative. So it's the third time that my cancer had mutated. And triple negative is the hardest to treat because
right.
when you have hormone positive, you can block it with hormones. So the only option with triple negative, because it's HER2 negative, is to treat it with chemotherapy. So depending on which chemotherapy they pick, and then now there's immunotherapy available. And I was eligible for that because of some of the, I forget if it's receptors or something. But so, yeah, I had really good response, which is so exciting.
That is.
And, you know, I don't just give chemo and Tecentriq the
No, you know, they don't get all the credit
for that. Like, I think yeah, it's so much more than that.
It is.
There's 100%. So much mindset involved. And, you know, I don't live in fear, honestly. Like, I have zero fear. I don't have any because I'm just thankful for every day that I get. And that, you know, I really see past this. I see past my cancer diagnosis, like, that I'm going to be completely healed. Yeah. And I actually see that next summer. Like, it's going to be completely gone. Okay. And I told my oncologist that. I'm like, don't ever tell me, like, don't give me a prognosis that I'm not going to listen to it. And he's like, I know, I already know that about you. But, so he was like high-fiving me when he gave me my results. Cause he's just like kind of shocked, you know, I'm like, hey, there, you know, I'm going fighting and this isn't over. This isn't the end of me at all. Like, no. I'm going to be completely healed. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
That is. Oh, I'm excited. So excited. I am. Yeah, I think that's that is wonderful news. And, you know, I hope that it continues. You definitely have the mindset and, you know, everything going for you, you know, to make that happen. So,
yeah.
I just want to tell you, you know, again, first of all, you know that I adore you, but I am so glad that we were able to make time together to get you onto the podcast, to share your story. I have no doubt that your story is going to inspire many people, and, you know, it's a powerful story. And so, you know, if people want to find you, they can go to livinghopecancerfoundation.com. And find you guys there and, you know, seek out any support that they need from the two of you.
Yes, it's all free. And, you know, we're a nonprofit, so we're hopefully doing some fundraising soon. And so it's just, that's our life work is to give back and help people, especially that missing piece when you get diagnosed and you're just full of fear and the doctor's like, here's your medical plan. There's a missing piece and that's your whole mindset and it's your fight. And it's that whole positive part of it that you're not alone in it. You've got us holding your hands and cheering you on. And there's so much you can do to make the rest of you healthy, too. So absolutely. Thank you so much for having me and for letting me share my story. I appreciate it so much, Melissa.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Behind the Pink Ribbon. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you or anyone you know would be interested in sharing your story, please send an email to podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com.
Thinking about advertising on this podcast? Our ads not only create awareness for your brand, but also contribute to the continued growth and support of this show. Email us today and be on our next episode. Email podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com for more information. You've been listening to Behind the Pink Ribbon, produced by American Creative Consulting, mixed and mastered at Riverview Podcasting Studios. For more information, please visit designbyacc.com.